Just so you know, this show is about scary stuff. So don't say I didn't warn you guys. And remember, don't be scared.
Episode 128, All for Love. War Baby here with another episode of Murderous Minors. What do you do with a pregnant 15-year-old whose parents are dead because she conspired to have them killed? This week on Murderous Minors, we look at how Solway, Tennessee officials handled such a situation following the June 2007 murders of Terrence McGee and his 41-year-old wife Elisa, orchestrated by Terrence's daughter Amanda McGee. Though she herself didn't pull the trigger, authorities were certain that without her influence, the murders would not have taken place because they allege that she fabricated accusations of child abuse against her father to develop a motive. This episode does mention generic allegations of sexual abuse, so please be advised. By the time she was 15 years old, Amanda McGee had a reputation for saying she was pregnant, and one name that came up often as to paternity was Andrew Brian Mann, whom she called Andy, a 21-year-old man whom McGee dated from May to June of 2007. Mann would later say that he thought McGee was 17 when they began dating, and by the time he learned her real age, they were well into a serious relationship. According to McGee herself, they were engaged after 2 weeks of knowing each other, and she said that the fact that he had a good job doing construction and had recently inherited a house made her feel like it would be very easy for them to start a family. The McGee family lived on Jolly Lane in Solway, Tennessee, located between the more well-known cities of Oak Ridge and Knoxville, and Terrence and Elisa had been married for 3 years in June 2007, but had been together for about 7. Amanda McGee's biological mother reportedly struggled with addiction and had no contact with her daughter since she was 4 years old, when she and Terrence split up. McGee described being happy when her dad and 35-year-old Elisa Hackworth got together, and even remembered the events of the day they met when she was 8 years old. She grew up calling Elisa mom and said she was always there for her, being the mother that McGee needed but hadn't had. She admittedly loved Elisa a great deal, and the feeling was mutual, but it was with Terrence that the turmoil arose. As she grew older, McGee became boy crazy, described as one of those girls who had to be watched like a hawk because she was always on the lookout for a new boyfriend. Her desire to date and her focus on boys caused tension between her and her father, a situation which only grew more complicated when the Tennessee Department of Child Services got involved when McGee was 13 years old. According to her, she and a classmate were writing notes about the abuse McGee was alleging that her father was inflicting on her at home and about how she wanted to run away. The notes were intercepted by a teacher who alerted the authorities, and although an investigation did take place, the file was closed and the allegations marked as unsubstantiated. No further allegations surfaced as McGee entered high school, and she stayed occupied with growing up, hanging out with friends, playing soccer, and dating boys. It was in May 2007 when a friend introduced her to 21-year-old Andrew Mann. Like I said before, the romance was a whirlwind by all accounts, one which she knew her parents wouldn't approve of, so she simply didn't tell them because not only was he an adult dating their juvenile daughter, he was troubled. Mann would later testify that he'd been born after his mother was raped at 14 and that, quote, "All I know about my father is he's in prison in Ohio." He testified that crippling separation anxiety resulted in him being homeschooled from the 3rd to 8th grades and that he quit school after being enrolled in Carnes High School, after which his stepdad threw him out. He went on to meet Amanda McGee after a failed relationship with someone he worked with, whom he said he got pregnant but who didn't go through with it. Within weeks, the pair was engaged and McGee had taken off with Mann, with her parents filing a missing persons report on May 29, 2007. McGee said that as their relationship progressed, she began to share with Mann her troubles with her father and that it had been her boyfriend's idea to get her away from the abuse. Mann said that, quote, she said he was physically abusing her and some other issues that were going on. She really just needed someone to talk to. The pair fled to the home of Mann's grandma, who ended up calling Terrence and Elisa McGee after about a week to let them know where she was. Mann brought McGee home, but they took off together again on June 12th. This time, the McGees knew who their daughter was with and where to find him, so Elisa got Mann on the phone and threatened law enforcement intervention if he failed to return their child. Mann later testified that leading up to his second attempt at running away, McGee had, quote, repeatedly told him that she was being physically abused by her father and threatened to kill herself if Mann didn't kill Terrence McGee. When the lovebirds arrived, Terrence used his car to block Mann in, exiting the vehicle and approaching his daughter's boyfriend with a .38 caliber pistol in his hand. He confiscated Mann's identification and recorded his license plate number so that should this happen again, police could help track them down. The parents could also now threaten statutory rape charges since Mann's driver's license clearly showed that he was 21 years old, and they hoped that a potential jail sentence would help dissuade the relationship from continuing. What that threat did, however, was exacerbate an already tense situation that Terrence and Elisa McGee no longer had control over, as within days of the driveway confrontation, 15-year-old Amanda McGee had already concocted a brutal plan and put it into action. You see, McGee was already pregnant with Mann's child, and should police be notified as to the gravity of his disregard for the law, it wouldn't end well for any of the three of them. So McGee told Mann about the baby and put her plan into action. She took the pistol that her father had threatened her boyfriend with and placed it in a Crown Royal whiskey bag that she then gave to her friend and neighbor, Rebecca. McGee instructed her to pick up Mann and give him the bag, and Rebecca later testified that when she handed it over, she could tell what it was and asked Mann about it. Rebecca said he showed her the gun and she replied, quote, are you really going to kill her parents? He just smiled. Rebecca wasn't even sure if McGee was really going to have Mann's baby, testifying later that, quote, she had told me and everyone at the school 3 times before that she was pregnant, but going on to say that she didn't know what to do. She testified that she went to the McGees to tell Terrence, but that Amanda intercepted her and convinced her that the plan was off. It was only when she saw lights, heard sirens, and gathered with neighbors outside 2 days later that she realized the plan had not been canceled, but had been kicked into high gear and carried out. She and everyone else would soon learn that, in the days leading up to the murders, Mann told his 23-year-old friend Christopher Gordon Kirkland that his girlfriend was abused at home and unsafe. Kirkland testified that Mann, quote, expressed his anger at Amanda's parents for trying to keep the two of them apart because of their age and stated that he wanted to shoot and kill them, according to Mann's later appeal. Kirkland also testified that Mann asked him to help and Kirkland agreed, telling him, quote, that if he was ever to kill anyone, he would do it by shooting them in the head. A few days later, around 9:30 a.m. on Friday, June 29, 2007, 15-year-old Amanda McGee waited for her stepmother Elisa to leave for work, then called Mann, who arrived as his girlfriend's father Terrence remained asleep in his bed. Mann's later appeal stated that his testimony at trial was that, quote, she started calling him every 30 seconds and telling him things like, baby, this has to be done. He said he came to tell Amanda that the plan was off, but that she begged him and begged him, like he said she'd been doing since the driveway altercation, to kill her father. Mann had told police just after his arrest, though, that he sent Amanda to her bedroom in the back and had her crank the radio before heading into the McGees' master bedroom. Mann then called Kirkland as he stared at the back of Terrence McGee's sleeping head, and Kirkland testified that Mann asked him if he should shoot him from behind. Kirkland said that he answered, quote, "I don't know, I'm at work, I gotta go," and ended the call. Mann said that he then shot and killed Terrence McGee as he lay asleep in his bed. His autopsy would indicate that the man survived the point-blank head wound and, quote, "it was possible he may have been conscious and capable of feeling pain for an hour or two after receiving his injury." The medical examiner later testified that, quote, "we did not find the bullet in the body. It fell into his mouth and it was coughed out. He was coughing up blood." Amanda McGee next called her stepmother at work and told her that she loved her before inquiring as to what time she'd be home. Elisa said around 4:30 p.m. and with time on their hands, McGee and Mann went out for breakfast as her father lay dead in their home. The pair also called Kirkland again and met up with him before meeting him back at the McGee home to see Terrence's dead body, after which he said that he, quote, "freaked out." Kirkland also testified that McGee didn't seem sad or upset that her father had just been murdered by her boyfriend and that the couple told him that Elisa would soon be killed as well. He returned to work and told no one about what he'd seen or knew. Kirkland said that McGee didn't want Elisa to be killed, but that Mann said they couldn't leave her alive because she knew that the couple had a reason to want to kill them. Mann testified that he didn't want Elisa to be killed, but that McGee told him that it had to be done. He said they spent the remainder of the time between when Kirkland saw Terrence's body and Elisa returned from work arguing about whether she should be killed. When the woman finally arrived just before 5 p.m., she was met at the door by Mann. He told police he'd already sent McGee back to her bedroom again when Elisa came home and he, quote, "told her to sit down on the couch that we need to talk." And her first words were, "you know, are you going to kill me?" And I told her, "I'm sorry, I have to." She made a quick dart. She tried to go into the kitchen, he said, and it was then that he shot her once in her back and once through her arm and into her torso, with that bullet, quote, "ripping across her chest, puncturing her lungs and heart." He testified that, quote, "I don't really remember watching her fall. She was face down. She was dead." Her autopsy would indicate that she likely survived for 3 minutes after she was gunned down. After Elisa had been shot to death, McGee and Mann turned the air conditioner down and eventually took her debit card out to party with their friends, where Kirkland met up with them again. He testified that, quote, "they acted as if nothing had happened," and that Mann appeared to be controlling the situation. Kirkland also claimed that Mann wanted him to tamper with the bodies by covering them in bleach to postpone their discovery. Authorities would later find bleach near Elisa's body and Terrence's gun in Mann's car. Did you know that Every Plate is 25% cheaper than grocery shopping? That's right. Their quality ingredients come pre-portioned to help you save money and reduce food waste. You know, like that bag of spinach you throw out every week. Just look at it like this. One Every Plate meal costs about as much as one cup of coffee. You just get more bite for your buck. And Every Plate is America's best value meal kit with scrumptious dinners at a fraction of the cost of takeout. Before you know it, you'll be skipping the drive-thru and the grocery store and letting Every Plate plan, shop, and deliver everything you need to cook a delicious meal at a consistently low price. And now, you can get even more out of your Every Plate delivery with new extras to complement your weekly order, including fun extras like Vanilla Delight Cheesecake, Sweet Kale Salad, Garlic Bread, and Protein Bundles to take dinner to the next level. Not much of a cook? Not a problem. Every plate recipes come together in just 6 simple steps and are done in about half an hour. And with 17 recipes to choose from that change every week, you can count on crowd-pleasing meals every single night. Now it's your turn. Try every plate for just $1.79 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code WARBABY179. That's $1.79 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code WARBABY179. Prior to meeting their friends that Friday night, Man brought McGee to another friend's house and asked if they could stay a few days. They stayed out that night partying, and the next day, Saturday, June 30th, 2007, the couple went for a ride on Man's motorcycle and took Elisa McGee's debit card to a local outlet mall, where they used it to purchase maternity clothing and items for their upcoming bundle of joy. On Sunday, July 1st, they went to church with their friend's family and began to prepare to have a cookout when police showed up at the house. Earlier that afternoon, the bodies of Terrence and Elisa McGee had been discovered by members of Elisa's family, who were frantic when she couldn't be reached. The whole family was on baby watch because Elisa's sister was expecting twins at any moment, so they found it very alarming that they couldn't get a hold of her. A few relatives visited the house on Jolly Lane and could see Elisa lying face down on the kitchen floor, and she wasn't moving. Once inside, they discovered that Terrence had been shot to death as well and that his teenage daughter was missing. McGee's friend Rebecca had wandered out of her house down the street once neighbors began to gather outside, and she soon approached police and told them everything she knew, including where the missing teen and her boyfriend could be found. They were taken into custody without incident, much to the surprise of their hosts, who hadn't sensed that anything was amiss. Amanda McGee's brother told the local paper following her arrest that, quote, "She's 15 and things need to be forgiven because I can't grasp that she actually knew that this was going to happen." At first, Mann took the blame for the idea of murder, telling police in his videotaped interrogation that, quote, "It was more so me than it was her," before giving investigators a full rundown on the events leading up to the murders and the murders themselves. He didn't try to hide the fact that McGee had been a full participant, even telling them where to find the murder weapon. When McGee was interrogated, she was indignant at first until police told her that her boyfriend had told them everything there was to know about why and how her parents were murdered. McGee then weepily told, quote, "the whole truth. It was going to come out one way or the other." She told investigators that they'd killed her parents so they could keep their baby and stay together. 21-year-old Andrew Mann was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and held on $2 million bail, looking at a potential sentence of life without the possibility of parole. His pregnant 15-year-old girlfriend, Amanda McGee, was charged as a juvenile with 2 counts of delinquency by reason of murder, with the judge telling her that, quote, "because of the serious nature of these charges and because of the lack of custodians to go home to, we're going to hold you." The next day, McGee wrote Mann a letter that began, quote, "I'm so sorry we got caught. I'm so sorry I made you do this. I don't regret it. I only regret getting caught. You have my word that if I get out by the time I turn 18, I will visit you." She ended with, quote, "I love you, Andrew Mann, forever and always." McGee was not released by the time she turned 18, as she was waived to adult court in late February 2008. She was now also facing life without the possibility of parole, and her bond was set at $200,000. One psychiatrist for the defense testified that he suspected sexual abuse by the father, but the state quickly pointed out that any previous abuse claims had been shut down by DCS and the Knox County Sheriff's Office Child Investigation Team 4 years before the murder. He'd also diagnosed McGee as suffering from bipolar disorder and stated that she needed inpatient treatment in a benign setting, a, quote, "environment that contains her, can hold her." The metaphor would be as a mother would hold a child. A prosecution psychiatrist from Vanderbilt University said that he'd seen McGee over a two-day span 3 months before and that, though she had a flair for dramatic descriptions, he contended that she suffered from PTSD. He said that she didn't talk about murdering her parents, but did talk about being sexually abused. By the time she'd had that hearing, the teen was visibly pregnant, and the judge determined that she would receive better care if she were to remain in juvenile detention until the start of her trial. Although she had relatives who cared about her predicament, none of them stood up and offered to become her guardian or the guardian of her child. And 2 weeks later, on March 14, 2008, McGee was transported to a hospital where she delivered a baby girl. The child was immediately placed in state custody and was later adopted by her foster parents. Regarding Mann and Kirkland, the friends had both been indicted months before the baby came in early October 2007. They had both been arrested on 2 counts of first-degree murder, but Kirkland's charges were reduced to accessory to murder after the fact a few weeks after Terry and Elisa had been murdered. No one was saying that he had helped carry out the plan, but they did accuse Kirkland of flat-out failing to save Elisa McGee's life. Following his arrest, Kirkland's adopted father had taken to the press to try and describe the 23-year-old to explain why he had behaved the way he did. The boy had been 5 years old when Ron Kirkland married his mom, and they later sent him to Knoxville Baptist Christian, a private school, to keep him away from bad influences and out of special education. He'd been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder as a child and graduated at 19. The elder Kirkland told the Knoxville News Sentinel prior to the murder charges being dropped that, quote, in a perfect world, he would have walked out of that house and called police. I know he's going to serve time. I could understand accessory after the fact or withholding information, but he wasn't there when the trigger was pulled. Kirkland's bond was reduced to $1,000 and he posted it and went home after being in jail for some 3 weeks. Many close to the case got the impression that this reduced charge and release meant that he was going to cooperate with the prosecution and testify for the state, and as his friend's trial dates closed in, McGee's defense attorney began to allege more and more terrible accusations of unproven sexual misconduct against Terrence McGee. Andrew Mann went to trial first in early December 2008, where his friend Christopher Kirkland testified against him, but Amanda McGee did not. Mann testified in his own defense as well, but his tears did not persuade the jury, and he was found guilty in less than 30 minutes on December 5, 2008. He automatically received 2 life sentences, which were technically 2 terms of 51 years to life. A few weeks later, on January 15, 2009, the judge decided that they would be served consecutively, saying, quote, I don't know what Mr. Mann is going to be like at age 73, but I know that at age 22, he's a dangerous offender. More than a year later, on March 4, 2010, Mann filed a notice of appeal for post-conviction relief in the Court of Criminal Appeals of Tennessee at Knoxville, whose decision was filed on January 23, 2012. The appeal states that, quote, the defendant claims that this trial court erred by 1. Denying his motion to suppress. 2. Refusing to allow his expert witnesses to testify concerning this defendant's ability to premeditate. 3. Admitting photographs of the crime scene. 4. Excluding a report made in 2003 by his girlfriend to the Department of Child Services, claiming that she had been abused by one of the victims, and 5. Imposing consecutive life sentences on the grounds that he was a dangerous offender. Mann's conviction and sentence were upheld, with the decision reading, quote, after carefully reviewing the record and the arguments of the parties, we reject each of these claims and affirm the judgments of the trial court. The Tennessee Supreme Court declined to review the decision, and Mann filed a pro se petition seeking post-conviction relief, quote, claiming that the trial counsel was ineffective for advising the petitioner to testify at trial, according to the appeal. Their decision was filed on June 2015, and the court decided that, quote, discerning no error, we affirm the judgment of the court, and with that, man's hopes of ever becoming paroled came to an end. After multiple delays, Amanda McGee's murder trial was finally scheduled to begin, but she took a deal with the state and pled guilty to 2 counts of second-degree murder on July 20, 2009. She received a total sentence of 45 years in prison, getting 20 years for the murder of her father and 25 years for the murder of her stepmother. McGee will be 31 years old in 2022 and is currently housed at Deborah K. Johnson Rehabilitation Center in Nashville, Tennessee, with a sentence end date of June 30, 2009. She can apply for parole after serving 85% of her sentence.